From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. The show can also be heard at KCRW.com. My guest, director John Badham, has had an amazing career, from directing on stage at Yale to doing films that are basically iconic. We think of movies such as War Games, Saturday Night Fever, and now, of course, he's directing episodes of Heroes, and has a great book. I was just told Lawrence Fishburne recently has been recommending this book to first-time directors about how to handle yourself on a film set. And John, the name of the book is?
I'll Be in My Trailer.
And tell the story about the title of the book.
The title of the book comes from an unfortunate incident between John Travolta and myself in his first movie and my second movie, Saturday Night Fever. And we're on the Verrazano Bridge, and it's like 20 degrees below zero in February, shooting in the middle of the night. And the production manager is worried about a stunt where people have to fall off the bridge. So they say, let's do it. Let's do it real quickly before it freezes up and gets too icy there. So I quickly stage the scene with the stunt doubles, and the actors are in makeup getting ready and so on. So I just figure it out just right where they're going to be standing when this accident happens. And we shoot the guys falling off the bridge. It's terrific. Now, a couple of hours later, we get out there and we bring the actors out and say, okay, now we're getting to the part where you guys get out on the bridge and you fall off. And you stand here, and Travolta, you stand here, and Bobby C. be here. And Travolta looks at it and he goes, I'm not standing there, and I'm not going to do it that way either. And I said, well, it was kind of accidental, you see, because the stuntman had to do this before it iced up, and I'd give him the whole story. He says, I don't care. Do it over again with the stuntman. I said, well, they went home a few hours ago. We can't. He said, it's not my problem. I said, but, and I'm about to go through the whole routine again with him as the sun is getting ready to come up and we're not going to be there tomorrow. And Travolta looks at me and says, I'll be in my trailer. And he turns and he walks away, and there I'm standing, holding my butt in my hands and going, oh, my God, what am I going to do? Finally, I realize that what I have to do is somehow hope my editor can solve this problem of mismatch in the staging, and I have to go in on hands and knees and do mea culpa and put sackcloth and ashes on my head and say, John, I'm really sorry. Let's do it your way. And then I left it to the editor to solve. Well, if you look at the DVD real closely, you can see there's a mismatch. You got to look fast, but now you can pause those DVDs and you can see the mistake. And the whole point of it was, it wasn't Travolta being a problem. It was me, stupidly, not having gotten him out there when I had to do this, you know, panic staging in the beginning, because you always find out that the actor wants to do it a different way. And you can always work it out if you talk to him about it up in front. But when you stick them with it afterwards, they go, oh, well, why don't we have the stunt double do my part then? Let him do my lines.
My guest is director John Badham. We're talking about his book, I'll Be in My Trailer. You had an incredible career working at Universal Television in the days, and it was still kind of a factory, and it was where you really got your training. And you worked with a number of amazing actors, and you happened to work on a show where one of the actors insisted on a certain type of cigarette, and there's some a way you wanted to stage the scene.
Oh, this was at a time when the networks were saying we can't be showing branded cigarettes on television. You could still see cigarettes and you could still let people smoke, but it had to be sort of a generic pack. So you'd say, okay, well, I smoke Marlboros, so the prop man would take real Marlboro cigarettes and put them in one of the dummy packs. And now the actor in this case, who just passed away a few months ago, was Tony Franciosa, and the show was called Name of the Game. And Tony Franciosa was a very stubborn guy with a big temper, and he was hard to deal with. So when they'd give him cigarettes, they'd give him the fake pack and the real Marlboros in there, whatever he smoked. And during the shot, he would reach for his cigarette, and suddenly out would come a real pack of Marlboros. He had just thrown away the dummy pack and just perversely went and got the real pack. And the prop man was in terrible trouble. The director would talk to him about it, and then he and the director got in a big fight. and the head of the television for NBC had to go down and talk to him. Nobody could have any success. He would just get madder and madder and madder. So the producer was Randall McDougall, who was president of the Writers Guild and was a very sweet, professorial sort of man. He said, "I'll handle it." And everybody goes, "Sure you will." And he kind of goes down with his little professorial tweed jacket on with the leather things and smoking his pipe. And he says, "Tony, you know about those cigarettes?" "I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear about those cigarettes anymore." He said, "No, it's okay. It's okay, Tony. You don't have to worry. Whenever you want, just go ahead and use whatever pack you like, and it's fine. It's no problem. I've talked to the network. Everybody's cool with it." He goes, "Oh, okay, well, fine, good, good, good." And Randall says, "I'll see you tomorrow." And he turns and he walks away. And then you remember how Columbo used to get to the door and stop and turn around? Well, Randall McDougall stops at the door of Tony's trailer and he turns around and he says, "Oh, I should tell you one thing. Just remember that whenever you do that and we see the pack, we just have to cut away from you." And Franciosa went white. McDougall quickly got out of there, and we never saw the cigarettes ever again.
Now, one of the things you directed that I think was a landmark piece of filmmaking for television in so many ways was a pilot for a series called The Law. Now, explain to the audience what that film was.
That was a series about the law from the point of view of the public defenders, and it took place in the public defender's office. And how did they train, the kind of people they had to work with? You know, everybody they had to work with didn't have a dime and usually were in a lot of genuine trouble. And it was just such an interesting series. We cast Judd Hirsch in the first big role he ever had. Up to that point, it was American Airlines commercials and something called Shower to Shower. But we wanted the most real kind of guy. And we had an advisor named Alvin Nirenberg, who is now a judge in Van Nuys Court. And Alvin Nirenberg had been going down into the tank every morning to see 28 new clients that he had never seen before. And he had 20 minutes to prepare defenses for all 28 of them. I mean, imagine going through like lightning and they've got bad stories, they've got lies, they've got, you know, you never know what you're dealing with. And how does a guy like that help these people and deal with them with humor? So this was a really interesting series that won the Emmy that year for the best dramatic show of the year.
And how did you – because the show also has as a Charles Manson-like figure, a very young Gary Busey in the pilots. Mm-hmm. But talk about casting in those days. Now you got a chance to you talked about getting Judd Hirsch, but getting also Gary Busey as well. And the great piece of music, the Gilbert and Sullivan, you ended the piece with.
Yes. Well, the casting was – Bill Sackheim, the producer, said to NBC, "I want to cast in this nobody that you have ever seen before. You're not going to know any of these actors." And they looked at him and went, "Okay." And so in our casting, we're trying to find actors with real skill, real chops, but that we've never seen before. And so people like Barbara Baxley, who was known in theater, or Sam Wanamaker, who created the Shakespearean – redid the Shakespearean theater in London, those kind of actors that the American public really wasn't familiar with. And they had started out saying, "Well, can't you use George Segal? Can't you use Donald Sutherland? All these well-known." And they said, no, "I want it to be so real." And Bill Sackheim said to me, "I want you to make it look like it's totally real." So we did one of the first shows that was almost completely handheld. And this is before there was Steadicam or anything like that. So you're just got this 65, 70-pound beast on your shoulder that you're trying to shoot 35 millimeter with and do it in a handheld way to get a documentary kind of feeling with it.
It's a treat, Mike. It's the director, John Badham. His book is a really entertaining and informative book about filmmaking and directing and dealing with the egos, but also finding a way to integrate that part of the artistic process the actors have to bring into the filmmaking as well. The book is called I'll Be In My Trailer. What made you decide to write the book at this point in your career?
Well, I found not only is it difficult for me to work with actors, but it was something that film students, you know, beginning directors, when I look at the young director and I say, here's what you do when an actor has an idea. What's that? What's that? They all get very attentive. I say, you say yes. And they go, what? I say, yeah. You say yes. And then they have another idea and you go, yes. And that's the way you're going to get on the good side, because you know what? The bad ideas sort themselves out sort of automatically. Don't think you're going to get trapped into some hell where you're going to be doing, you know, something you don't want to do. You're going to avoid being trapped in the hell of the actor resenting you. And what all the – I interviewed so many actors for this book, and talking to Marty Sheen and to James Garner and Anne Bancroft, and it's all like they're saying the same thing. I want to be in an environment where I feel like I can fail. I want to be in a place where I feel trusted and I can make mistakes and it's okay, because then I can create. You know, if I come into a set, Michael Chiklis tells me this from The Shield, if I come in a set and I feel a director is just all about the camera and the angles and stuff, I'm feeling like, oh, he's not going to pay any attention to me. He's not going to – I'm out here on my own. I'd rather have a director come over and go, Michael, hey, how are you doing this morning? Here's what we're going to do. And just feel like I'm welcome there and I'm part of the process. I'm not just, you know, a robot or a piece of meat.
Well, so much of the book is about finding a way to deal with these fears, because of the kind of vulnerabilities that actors bring in, that when we hear these stories about movie star behavior, we don't often get a chance to hear that there are insecurities beneath these bad behaviors too.
That's right. It's so much about fear and so much about – you know, they say that one of the most terrifying things for people in the world is to get up and speak in public. And even when you've been an actor for years and years and years, you still have that kind of terror. And you're given lines written by somebody else, so you're sort of protected by that. But still, you're out there. Do I look good? Am I making it believable? Is it feeling real? And that's a real kind of terrifying situation. And the actor has to be kind of nurtured and let feel it's okay to try things. That's why rehearsal is really good. And yet we throw actors into situations all the time where there's no time for rehearsal. Now, I just worked with a woman on Heroes who plays the evil mother, like a Angela Lansbury type of character. And she's the mother for Adrian Pastar. Well, she's just terrifying on film. When you see her and she just has this evil quality to her. Well, the real actress comes in. The real actress is so timid you kind of look at her and she falls over in a dead faint. And she starts stuttering. When, I'm a little bit late today and can we do this? And right away I go into overdrive of just making her feel comfortable and just easing her into things. And when she's got in her mind what she's going to do, she comes out and it's dynamite. It's scary. It's wonderful. But underneath is a very fragile person. And even the meanest people can be like that.
We'll take a break and come back. My guest is director John Badham. His amazing, entertaining, and informative book is I'll Be in My Trailer. I'm Elvis Mitchell. That's The Treatment.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guest is director John Badham. His book is I'll Be in My Trailer. You're also teaching now, too. And writing the book must have come out of talks with students that you've had in your class who do come from so many backgrounds, because so many directors now are about the technical aspect of filmmaking, which is, to some extent, I think, a kind of a show-offy, almost exhibitionistic kind of thing because they don't have the background of working with actors.
They don't have the background. What they have the background does is working with maybe screenplays they wrote themselves, maybe working with camera, you know, all the technical things. In addition to the screenplay. And the technical things are mechanical devices that work. You know, the camera does kind of what you tell it to do. And the actor does not what you want them to do.
And I've got to think that part of your writing the book is your way of helping to understand these people have as much to offer as the camera angles.
Yes. There's two ways to go about staging a scene. You can sit at home and sort of plan visually what it's going to look like. And then go in and sort of enforce everybody to work into those storyboards. This is the way Hitchcock worked. I mean, Hitchcock would literally show up in the morning with about 20 or 30 storyboards that he would hand over to the assistant director. And he'd say, Hilton, it was Hilton Green, was his assistant director for years, stage this first one and call me when they're ready. So that means it was a completely mechanical procedure. Hitchcock would go over in his office and read the Variety or whatever he did and get his fingernails done or something. And then Hilton would call up and say, okay, Hitch, we're ready. And Hitchcock would then be driven one block to the set. They would drive the car into the set. He'd roll down the windows and look and say, go ahead, do the scene. And it was done mechanically like that. So there was no chance for spontaneity from the actors. That was just done that way. Now, a lot of directors don't have the ability to do it the way Hitchcock did it, but they still kind of take that mechanical approach to
it. Also, Hitchcock famously said actors are cattle.
That's right. And then afterwards he said, and I can't even do Hitchcock anymore. I used to be able to do it. He'd say, I never said actors were cattle. I merely said they should be treated like cattle. Pardon my horrible Hitchcock there. But the way I do it and the way almost any smart director will do it, whether it's Sidney Pollack or Mark Rydell or Oliver Stone, we all take a very similar approach, which is you get the actors on the set and you say, okay, well, maybe you come in this door and you might be sitting at the desk, but just take that as a start and go ahead. Let's see what happens. Let's see what happens. And the first time you do the scene, you'll get the most amazingly awful thing you ever had. It'll cause you to have a heart attack if you're not used to it. And you say, okay, good. Oh, that's wonderful, hiding your panic. And do it again. And then the next time you'll see that suddenly they start to focus a little bit. About the third time through, they are getting the sense of the dramatic import of the scene. And they are finding things that you didn't think of when you were at home trying to plan it out in this mechanical way. They're starting to come up with ideas in addition to yours. By about the fourth time through, they have discovered a blocking that is really interesting, very photographable, and you couldn't talk them out of it with a subpoena. And it really, really works. It makes sense for the dramatic import of the scene and works beautifully.
It's the treatment, I guess, of director John Benham. We know, of course, from such films as War Games, Blue Thunder, Saturday Night Fever, Stakeout. And his first film as a director, I want to talk about that a little bit because it's mentioned in your book, I'll be in my trailer, Bingo Long's Traveling All-Stars and Motor Kings. That's a big movie to take on as a first-time director. You've got action. You've got a lead. One of your lead actors is a comedian who's, let's say, a kind of an obstacle to direct. And you talk about how you were able to solve some of these problems.
Well, it was the most wonderful film because it was about the period of Negro baseball and right at the very end of its life before Jackie Robinson was taken up into the Brooklyn Dodgers. And there were these amazing players there who are just so good and way better than the white players of the time. So there was a kind of a sadness to it. And yet at the same time, as the old players I talked to said, you had to have a sense of humor about it. If you didn't, you'd go commit suicide. You know, so these guys had great fun on the ball field and they laughed and they played jokes on each other. And watching those ball games was so much fun, way more fun than watching, you know, the regular New York Giants. They were entertainers at the same time they were ball players.
We should say the actors in the film were.
I had a cast that was composed of some of the old ball players who were these kind of entertainers, And then I had Richard Pryor and Billy Dee Williams and James Earl Jones. Richard was coming from his background as a comedian, but he'd also started a great career as an actor from Lady Sing the Blues, where he was nominated for an Academy Award, and this wonderful sense of humor. And he was playing a kind of crazy character who was based on a real guy who, in order to try to get into the white major leagues to play, decided that he would pretend he was Cuban. So he was learning Spanish throughout the film, a bad Spanish, so he could pretend that he was Cuban. And so Pryor is going around doing all of this bad Spanish. ¿Dónde puedo cambiar cheques de viajero? Meaning, where can I cash traveler's checks? So Pryor was just there and so funny and so great, but at the same time, a lot of anger in him, and things would just make him a little crazy and a little angry. And one day we were doing a drive-by of all the cars, and James Earl Jones is in a motorcycle. Billy Dee Williams is driving this beautiful red Ford, and Richard Pryor has this kind of yellow four-door convertible that was just amazing. And they're coming by in front of the camera, and suddenly a vehicle that wasn't supposed to be there showed up, and James Earl Jones nearly hit it, and he veered out of the way on his motorcycle. That was the scary part, that we were thinking, oh, my God, we're going to lose James Earl on a motorcycle where you're totally vulnerable. Billy Dee pulled to a halt, and way in the back, Richard pulls to a halt. And we're all run over to see if James Earl is all right, and he's fine. And he says, oh, yeah, let's go again. That's all right. And I hear a door slam, and I look off in the distance, and I see Richard has gotten out of the car, gotten into one of the studio cars, and he's gone back to the hotel. So I did what I probably should have done in the first place, which is to put the stunt double in to let Joffrey Brown drive the car, because Joffrey was going to be fine. And I get back to the hotel, and I hear from my partner, Rob Cohen, Richard wants you to come up and apologize to him. I go, for what? He says, you nearly killed him today. I go, no, we nearly killed James Earl. And I apologize to James Earl. I mean, and Billy Dee seems to be cool. He was in more danger than – well, this went on for a while, and I was young enough and stubborn enough and stupid enough to kind of just say, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to apologize for something I didn't do. Nowadays, I'd be down there in a minute going, Richard, I'm so sorry, because what's it going to hurt me? And so the next morning, Richard confronts me as I come out of the hotel, and he stands in front of me looking mean, saying, you owe me an apology. And I said, no, I really don't. He said, okay, you don't care about me. I'm going home. And he meant going back to Los Angeles from Macon, Georgia. And so here, me, Mr. Smart Alecky, now here's something, never try this at home, kids. I looked at him and I said, well, Richard, you know, there's one thing I can tell that will help you. I said, don't go through the Macon airport. Go all the way to Atlanta. It's a lot easier to get home from there. You know, I wish I could say it was worth the price of admission to see the look on his face. But it wasn't. I got in the car. I drove off. And now my partner, Rob Cohen, is left to clean up the mess and get him to come out there. And, you know, finally I wised up and apologized to Richard, who settled down. That's all he wanted, was somebody to say, God, I'm sorry you felt bad. That's all it took. And I, you know, God bless him. I felt horrible when he passed. And, you know, I loved his comedy, and I just always felt bad that I thought it was funny to be, you know, cute with people like that. Well, you just can't deal with actors like that. You can't treat them that way. You got to treat them like human beings and with respect.
The author of that statement, and it's in his new book, I'll Be in My Trailer, is director John Badham. You also worked as an actor at two fairly interesting points in his career. You worked with Richard Dreyfuss twice.
Mm-hmm. Three times, actually.
Oh, gosh, right. Talk about those experiences with him.
Well, Richard is such a treat to work with. And when he finally decided to clean up his act and you know, get off banned substances, there is such a wonderful actor there who's so smart, who's just incredibly smart and who looks at acting as a problem solving kind of enterprise and how to be creative and problem solving. But there was that period after The Goodbye Girl where he was a little crazed and, you know, a little strung out on different substances, which he would tell you if he were sitting right here. And we did Whose Life Is It Anyway with him like that. And this is an amazing performance by Richard Dreyfuss.
And the powerhouse cast, too, because you got him up against John Cassavetes in the film.
John Cassavetes and Christine Lottie. And when we went to do Stakeout 7 years later, I complimented him on something to do in the performance with Whose Life Is It Anyway? And he stopped and he looked at me. He said, you know, I know I was in that movie, Whose Life Is It Anyway, because I've seen it. But I can't remember anything about being in the movie. And he said, I was just that strung out that I have no idea what I did.
When you ended up as a director of action and of comedy, given how you started in stage and even in film, was that kind of a surprise to you?
Well, it was a surprise, and I was always frustrated because I loved working with actors. But when things with action would come along, Spielberg would get these things, and they go, well, he's the action guy, and you work with the actors. And the Bingo Long Traveling All-Stars was actually a picture that Spielberg was supposed to direct. And he couldn't because he was trying to get Jaws out and into the theaters. So I was lucky enough to get it. And then Blue Thunder came along and War Games.
And then The Hard Way.
And The Hard Way. And suddenly now I'm the guy who does the action. And I go, yeah, but I'd like to work with the actors too. And it's like you can't get back there from here.
Is that one of the things that you like about doing television? Because a show like Heroes gives you a chance, though, to get back to your roots or being in a scene where there's some intimacy in working with the actors and the action isn't so primary a part of it.
That's right. And working with the actors it can be so gratifying as you help them give their best performance. And
you've got quite a cast from people who've never done it before to young actors to actors who've been at this for a long time. It's got to be really kind of rewarding to get just to sort of use all those parts of you as a filmmaker.
It is. It's exciting, and especially to have such a large cast that's so enthusiastic. They arrive totally prepared. They're just ready to try anything. You know, the little girl plays the cheerleader, Hayden Panettiere, is just – if you say to her, can you cry? Well, that's a silly question for her. For her, that is, would you like me to cry out of the right eye or the left eye? Would you like a lot of tears or just a little bit of tears?
Well, we're out of time. John, thank you so much for coming.
Oh, thank you. It's so much fun to talk to you always.
Thank you so much. The book is I'll Be in My Trailer. It's a great book. Again, actors are now recommending it to first-time directors. You should read it, too. Our technical director is Mario Diaz. Bob Carlson is the editor. Gemma Dempsey's the producer. I'm Elvis Mitchell. Got a lot to learn. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.